Next item on the agenda, Regent Brody.
Thank you, Chair Milliken. Our first item is the acceptance of the auditor's report and financial statements for the year ended June 30, 2024. Susan?
I'll just take a moment to introduce our auditor, our lead. She's a partner with Forvis, Jennifer Williams. She's been with us a few years. And just another good audit for the university. And my thanks to Ronaldo and Amy and the controller's office. A lot of hard work goes in behind the scenes, and so I'm very appreciative. But anyway, I will turn it on. It's their audit, so I will turn it over to Jennifer.
Thank you, Susan. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you everybody. Again, as Susan mentioned, I'm Jennifer Williams. I'm a partner with Forvis Mazars. I also have Sarah Sweat with me here today. She's a senior manager and she really leads the team here on site. So she comes on site with the team. She's a WKU alum. It really works for about 2 or 3 weeks with the team here. So just want to, again, acknowledge the team and thank you for the opportunity to serve WKU. So a few items to go over. We're just going to go high level over the audit results for the year. A few financial statement highlights from the audit report, along with our required communication to you all, the Board of Regents letter, and then any questions you might have on this presentation. For the audit results, we did accomplish the audit plan and then met the reporting timeline to the state. So the reports were submitted to the state by the October 4th deadline. And this was also another important year with accreditation and timing of submitting that financial information. So it was nice to be able to meet those deadlines and have the great cooperation. Again, we couldn't do that without the team here. We had great client assistance and responsiveness from the team here. So the financial reporting in other areas on campus are always ready for us and prepared for the audit and have very helpful for all of our questions and concerns that we have. So as Susan mentioned, just a big thank you to Susan, Ronaldo, Amy, and all the accounting staff here. As a reminder, management does prepare all the financials and the analysis. So they prepare that information, so that has to be ready for when we arrive to look at that information. So we do various procedures and testing to look at that analysis that they had provided. So we have issued a clean, unmodified opinion on the financial statements. One thing you will note this year, they are back to comparative financial statements. We had 2 years that we had significant new standards to adopt, and so that impacts the way the standards board set that. That kind of impacts the how the financials are presented if we have to go backwards to help adopt those standards. So it was very nice with the timing that we did not have any new standards, and so they are back to comparative statements. There were no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in internal controls over financial reporting. And as I mentioned, there was no new standards to adopt during the year. Also, what that means is there wasn't significant changes to your financial statements that were prepared. A few financial highlights here. So this just gives some highlights from the audit report themselves. So here, this is net tuition, shows comparative. So a slight decrease, about 2.5 here. Just a reminder that this is net tuition. So as you look at information, again, the governmental standards board, you do have to show this net of the discount allowance. So any out-of-pocket cost the student does not have to provide is netted in this line. So there's different ways of reporting this information from an internal standpoint versus financial statements that are under a GAAP and GASB. So just want to highlight that sometimes there are differences because of the way the financial statements are required under the standards. Again, actual enrollment and gross tuition has increased over the prior year, but when you look at that discount, it also increased with that gross tuition. The net position is very strong. You see $173 million in the current year compared to $140, so net position increased $33 million there. And then the state appropriations, a slight decrease, $83 compared to $85. The main appropriations was about $77 million, so that stayed consistent. There was performance funding that had a slight decrease during the year, so that's a fluctuation there with the state appropriations. Here is just summarized financial highlights from the statements of net position. I know this might be a little bit small from a standpoint of getting the information on here. So just a few highlights here. The cash and cash equivalents, you'll see a shift there along with the investment. So in the prior year, there was a shift to move some funds into investments, and those were moved back into cash equivalents during the year. So that's where you see the change there from investments into cash equivalents. One item to also note is there is restricted cash and cash equivalents. You'll see that about the fourth line down. And that is about $37 million for the current year. And those are your bond proceeds. So those are restricted for certain purposes for capital outlays and projects. And so those can't just be used for normal operations. Assets held in trust, the change there is a slight change in that. You may recall in the prior year there were two new standards which required a lease and subscription asset to be placed on the statement of net position. So these are like your capital assets. And so again, this is an item that grossed up the statement of net position, and the change in those are just your normal amortization or payments of those items there. So overall, your total assets were very consistent, less than a percent change there for the year. In the liability section, again, as I mentioned, you have the GASB 96 and 87 for the lease and subscription asset. So those are the obligations that you have those rights to pay that. And then you have your long-term debt. There was no new bonds issued during the year, so no significant change in that. It's just the payments that were made here normal. And then the pension and OPEB liability, again, those obligations that you have for those payments, for those items. And that did have a decrease. Primary reason for the decrease in there, that is all driven on actuarial assumptions and items that are provided. So that is information that is just provided to the state and what your allocation portion of that is. Going on to the statements of revenues and expenses. So the first line here, federal and state grants. So again, there was an increase of about 3.6. Again, to help with the research, the student financial aid, and increase in that funding, so that is great. The total operating revenues stayed fairly consistent, only about $1 million change there. And then the total operating expenses did increase about $18 million. Overall, there was no significant fluctuations in the operations. The main driving item that impacts this operating expense line item that I give have here is the pension and the other post-employment benefit liability. So as those actuarial assumptions change, you either have income or loss from that. And so there was about a $17 million increase in expense that netted that down. So I don't want to get into the technicalities of that one, but that does impact that number. So I did want to highlight that there. In regards to the footnotes to the financial statements, as I mentioned, there was no new standard, so no new footnote disclosures were required. In note three, what I would just highlight, the deposits and investments, you do see that shift in the change because of the change of the investment. So there were tables in the prior year that are not repeated because they're not required. Note 16 also provides details of the component unit with the WKU Student Life Foundation. And then one item that was unique that you all are very familiar with is the merger with the WKU Foundation and College Heights Foundation. So if you look at those are two discreetly presented component units. So you see those financials in there. And with the merger, you still see the prior year for the WKU Foundation, and then you only see the current year activity because it came together. So that can get a little confusing when you look at all those pages, so just wanted to highlight there. But Note 17 does disclose that information and provide the details. Along with the financial statement audit, we also are required to complete the single audit. So that was also completed at the same time as the financial statement audit. And so we had no compliance findings or weaknesses to note with the federal dollars that were spent. And so going through the process, we have a risk assessment process that we are required to follow. And so in looking at that, there were three grants that we were required to test: the Student Financial Assistance Cluster, which is your predominant one on your schedule of federal awards, and then Head Start, and then the Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Recovery Fund. That one is determined by the government to be a high risk, so no matter pretty much what you spend on that, it is required to be tested. There is some limits on there, but that is one that they deem as high risk. I will pause there for any questions on the financial statement highlights before I get into the Board of Regents letter. Okay. Great. So again, as I mentioned, we do have required communications to you all, and so this is our some highlights from the Board of Regents letter that is provided. So this first slide here just lets you know the standards that are required to follow, and that we did issue a clean, unmodified opinion on the financial statements. We also know in that letter if there are any significant accounting policies, which those are described in note one to your financial statements. So we highlight that there. Then the management's judgments and accounting estimates. These are estimates that are inherent in your financial statements. So these are items that we pay particular attention to during the audit process. So your allowance for any uncollectible receivables, in pledges and grants and items like that, we look at that. We look at the valuation of investment securities. Again, the defined benefit pension plan and the other post-employment benefit plan assumptions. Again, we look at those actuary reports. We get the information for the state, so we have to look at those assumptions that are used in those reports. And then the GASB 87 and 96, which are your lease and your subscription assets, those are estimates that management had determined how to record those. So we look at those during the process. There was no unusual policies or any alternative accounting treatment that we noted during our review. We did not have any audit adjustments that were recorded. So sometimes during that process, we look through it and we have audit adjustments that are recorded. There were not any that were recorded to the financial statements that management had prepared. There were two items noted as what we call uncorrected misstatements. So one item was in the current year. We look at the information from the state, and under the other post-employment benefit obligation, sometimes it can flip to actually an asset versus an obligation. And you have various components of that. And one portion, a small portion of the benefit obligation, became an asset. It was about $995,000. So this is a net presentation for a gross. So currently in your financials, it is showing it net of that $995,000. So that liability is netted down. So again, we just note that from reporting purposes, that should be a gross presentation, but not deemed material. So that is item that we discussed with management and through the process with Dr. Brady, and looked and said, no, we don't have to report that. One item also that occurred in reviewing some accounts payable and construction process, there were items that were timing differences in when that should be recorded as a capital asset, and so it should have been accrued in the prior year and not occurring in the current year. Again, it was proper accounting from, like, you spent you had the amount that you spent for the capital asset. It was just a timing of when that was recorded on the financial statements. Again, that was about $1 million, not material to the overall financial statement. So again, that's what we call as an uncorrected item. The other item that we would just like to mention, as I noted, that we did not have any material weaknesses or significant deficiencies in internal control that we noted, but we do have various observations from going through the process and talking with people in payroll, accounts payable, the financial reporting team. And so we have just a few comments that we would like to offer as some other observations from a team standpoint. And so, for example, in accounts payable, we noted that they are shorter on the staff that we have seen in the past. And so management has discussed this, looked at a plan to hire another accounts payable individual. But when you have turnover and new individuals in these places, this is when errors could possibly occur. Again, the past adjustment, not a significant item, but if somebody is not as familiar with the processes and cut off, this could pose some risk in the future in that regard. Payroll was another area that we thought was lean on the employees in the payroll department. We believe a manager might be able to help in this role with some approvals and if there is turnover with the team members. In the financial reporting area, we've also seen about two employees turnover in that process from each year that we've been here. And so, again, looking at that is, can you help cross-train individuals? And so with the turnover with that. So we look at that as just a potential risk in the future, and it just offered those observations. And then in financial aid, again, that is something that is very strict with rules, with following those grants and doing that. So we know that there is time frames where institutional knowledge could be lost as people retire or move from different areas. So again, just want to offer those up as items that we had noted in our process and the reviews. And you just need leaders and managers in those roles at a higher skill level so they can help with the review and train individuals. So I know management is looking at that, looking at the processes, because there's always opportunities to improve and change some processes as well. And so we just offer that as an observation that we had during the audit process. So happy to take any questions on that presentation.
Any questions or comments? None? If not, I entertain a motion to accept the auditor's report.
So moved.
So moved.
I'll second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you so much, Jeremy.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Our next item is to accept the filing of the Statement of Revenues and Expenditures for the 3 months ended September 30th, 2023. Susan Howard, please.
Okay, so this is the standard quarterly Statement of Revenues versus Expenditures for the year and how we're comparing this year as compared to last year. So, overall, this is just an overall summary, which I thought was important to show you this year. It just summarizes the revenue and the expenses, and then basically the margin, revenue less expenditures, and the change from the prior year. So you'll see that our total revenue is up from the prior year about $10.4 million, and our expenses are up 5.1 million over prior year. So that brings us to a margin increase of about 5.2 over prior year. So that's, in my opinion, that's an excellent progress from prior year. So basically, our revenues being over expenses by 5 million over prior year. So now we will delve into the details of this. So total revenue is 41% of the budget this year as compared to 39% in prior year. And so that's 10.4, as I just stated, or 4.8% over the prior year. And these are all the various categories, which I will drill down into that a little bit more now. So net tuition revenue. So this is something that primarily, since Dr. Cavoni has arrived on campus, this is what we focus on. This is our single strategic focus on the revenue side of the budget, because a lot of schools can increase enrollment and actually lose revenue. So you really have to stay focused on this net tuition revenue. So what you'll see is the line of our gross tuition and fees, where we're at about 50% of the budget, which is primarily where you want to be, and 51% last year, and then our financial assistance. So you'll see where we have moved from $30 million in financial assistance last year to $27 million this year. So this gives us an increase in our net tuition revenue just for the fall semester of $3.2 million. So I'm not going to get into the details because it gets a little confusing, but going back to what the auditors just presented, the auditors are required to include other items into the discount that are not typically included in net tuition revenue. Those would be your Pell Grants, your CAP Grants, and primarily your loans to students. GASB see those as anything that they want, anything that could produce a refund included in discount. So that's the difference. And I know there's a lot of detail that goes into that, but I wanted to, if anybody's questioning why she showed a decline and I'm showing an increase, that's the reason.
Susan, could I also jump in? Statewide, internally, sometimes there's a complete focus on headcount. Pick the number metric of student population, and while those are important metrics, and obviously for recruitment and retention, we track them, the reality is that you can buy those numbers, and the way you buy them is through a discount rate that accelerates beyond your control. And so what we've been focused on is ensuring for the fiscal health of the institution is not focusing on a number of students, but rather ensuring that net tuition revenue is stable and growing. And so kudos to financial aid, enrollment management for working to keep our discount rate under control, make progress there, and at the same time, still bring a class of around 3,000 students. And I say around because you can be down in headcount and up in revenue. You can be up in headcount, which everybody would celebrate, and you could lose money. And so I just want to point that out. And then I'm appreciative, and I will reiterate what Susan said, that sometimes there are lay readers of the audit who ask questions about, well, why is net tuition revenue down in the audit? I thought you said we were up. And because they're calculated in two different ways, we do not use the audit for internal management purposes. That's what these numbers are used for. And so there's frequently confusion by folks who don't follow this as closely as we do. So I just want to make that crystal clear for certainly the board, but also anyone following along online.
So your other categories of revenue, of course, is our state appropriation. And this is just a reminder of what we went through in the budget this year. So our state appropriation, we had an excellent year with our legislators. We had an inflationary increase of 4.5%, a 3% increase to our Gatton Academy. And then I think as we've all experienced personally with our own insurance, we also had a significant insurance in the mandatory fire and tornado insurance to the state. So that was $2.2 million just for WKU. So the state actually gave us the money and our appropriation to fund that increase. Grants and contracts are higher for a couple of reasons. Our federal PIL, as I talked about in our budget presentation, is up by about $3.1 million, which is really important for our campus. We have a high percentage of PIL-eligible students. Our CAP program also increased by $1.3 million. But I think, too, I know Dr. Caboni and Provost Fisher, their efforts of wanting to get our designation of R2, our extramurally funded grants were up 10% over prior year just in the first quarter. So that's excellent news for our research efforts on this. So just a small item, our auxiliary revenue is also up, and that just really has to do with a technical adjustment and timing within our Aramark contract of how that journal voucher was made in the first quarter of this year and the second quarter last. So any questions on our revenue before I move into expenditures? Okay. So our total expenses, if you go down to the bottom line, you'll see that we're at about 34% of budget for this year and about 33% last year. And you'll see all the various categories, and I'll go through those here in a little bit of detail. So our personnel. So as I said, that personnel is about 22% of budget as compared to 23% of budget last year. So we would say in this instance that the salary expenses are relatively flat as compared to last year. And the fringe, as far as dollar amount, has actually gone up from $12 million last year up to about $12.5 in the first quarter this year. And that's a direct result of our health insurance increase. And that's something we're working as a campus to really look at for next open enrollment and how we might make changes to get that under control best that we can. It's a difficult area. Our direct expenses, again, as I talked about on the revenue side, you'll see other financial assistance is up primarily due to those increases in Pell Grants and CAP Grants. The dollar increase in our supplies and operating expenses directly related to that insurance increase in the mandatory state fire and tornado. Our maintenance and travel expenses are trending lower from the prior year, which is good news. And again, as I've said for the past 2 to 3 years, we're continuing to monitor the inflationary increases. I know that we like to hear on the news that inflation is getting back under control, but sometimes it still doesn't feel that way. And we're also continuing, the provost and myself and the president continues to do monthly monitoring with all of our campus units to make sure that everybody is staying within the rails and no one is getting out of control. So
That's really all I have on that, Regent Brody. I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions or comments, Mr. Simpson?
So just to talk about a couple of things I see in this and just the pattern and at a holistic level. Looking through some of the materials from last year, you know, I think we did see a decrease in supplies and operating expenses of around $6 million or so, but there was an increase in personnel costs that was more than just the... And I was just wondering, Mr. President, as you know, we've been talking about this natural tension we have in the RAMP model between the various units that you know, responsible center management, but it comes to this top level of if we have competing entities who are like, I need funding in my area, I need personnel in my area, whether it's student affairs or athletics or personnel or whatever it is, how do you decide between those tensions? How do you make those decisions in those types of conflicts?
Well, I think it's pretty simple. This is the amount of money you have. Don't overspend it. And if you need more, we can talk about how we allocate revenue to meet those needs. But until someone has the conversation around this is absolutely mission critical, then don't add it, right? One of the things that I think is important to recognize is that the formulaic nature of the RAMP model makes it easy to understand what revenue is coming to you. And so planning has to take all of that into account. I will say we've seen some good progress from athletics this year, year over year, and we can expect that to continue. Part of this is also the maturation process of the institution. There are always resources available, and you can have anything done that you need done, but you probably can't have or do everything that you want to do. And so I think you have to make strategic choices as a leader of an organization. If there are places where we need to have seed dollars that you think can help grow revenue, we have a strategic investment fund, both the provost and I, that can help with that. And we've done that over and over and over again. I think the other part that we have to be disciplined about, and this again is different than the way things used to be, is paying attention month after month after month, not waiting to the end of the year and seeing where we are. And so the discipline of managing a budget that falls certainly on unit leaders, but also requires a more elegant understanding of budgeting by our budget managers. And we've been working there and have grown there. And I think that to Todd's credit, he has a real CFO in athletics who has done a tremendous job of putting together a budget that actually reflects reality. And what we've done on the academic side of the house is budgets that reflect reality. And one of the ways you test that, and you know this, but with a business background, if you're watching kind of account transfers during the course of a year to cover expenses, why are you having to shift dollars between categories? You shouldn't have to do that if your budget reflects reality. And so we have had units that kind of put money where it always has been, even though it didn't reflect previous year expenditures. And it's a little technical, but as a manager, what you want to do is you want to make sure the budget that you've set up matches the expenditures that you have in the previous year, and you're not shifting dollars either among categories or among subunits, right? And so I think we've gotten much better at that. So to end it with this, I think our leaders have flexibility and the ability to hire where they need to hire. And if they don't, we have enough flexibility in the system where they can work with leadership to figure out how you address that challenge. And as you get lean, you have to have those conversations. I mean, what you heard in the audit around transitions and making sure you maintain the ability to transfer institutional memory is crucial. And so being intentional about that, having the resources available, is something we monitor all the time. And I think our deans and our VPs and athletic director, they are much better at this than we were even 3 years ago.
So I think that gets to one of the concerns. As you talk about getting more lean, one of my concerns I've expressed in here, and I think we heard a little bit today, and we've gone through three workforce reductions. We've had some natural attrition. We've had other things, and we've looked at units. And to use a sports analogy, I think we're looking at a number of offices, and we're thinking about a bend but don't break mentality. How low can we go? And I have some concerns in some areas that we're reaching that point. And they're not necessarily revenue-generating units. They're units that we've got to have staffing there for the health of the organization to mitigate risk. And so that's really what's where my concern is how do we, who stands up for them? How do we make sure that we don't get into a risk compliance issue at more, you know, campus-level offices?
Well, it's, you know, it's one of the things that we've been doing with internal audit is really taking a look at the risk profile of the institution. This is one of those areas that we're paying attention to because, as you say, it is a bend, don't break. And one of the reasons in the voluntary separation program that we've maintained the flexibility to be able to retain folks if we have something new in place is just that reason, number one. And number two, I will say, I don't think VSIP necessarily is around dollars. In some ways, it is about helping folks have an opportunity to go do things that they may have wanted to do that they don't, they may not have done before. And that can create culture change. And that's important, too, particularly as we evolve as a university and ramp up the expectations around research and what workload looks like. So all of that, I think, crucial for how we continue our work to mature and transform ourselves.
Any further questions or comments? If not, I'd entertain a motion to accept the filing of the statement of revenues and expenditures.
So moved.
Regent Miller. Second by Regent West. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Our third item is to formally approve a resolution to secure a $10 million line of credit from J.P. Morgan Chase Bank.
So this is the annual proposal we bring to the board each year to renew our line of credit. This is slightly different in that we have a new banking partner now with J.P. Morgan Chase, but basically it all remains the same. It's basically a $10 million line of credit rather than with Truist. It's with J.P. Morgan Chase. So we have never tapped into a line of credit since I've been at WKU. When I got here, we didn't have one, and I talked to the president, and I said, best practice is that you have one in case you need one, because if you need one, it's kind of hard to get one. So it's just basically a safety net. We have not tapped into it again. As far as interest rates, if we were to draw down from it, J.P. Morgan is pretty standard with how they do it, is we would have a choice between the overnight rate or the commercial banking rate, and I'm sure as Regent Brody knows, we would go with the overnight rate as it's typically lower than your commercial banking rate. So no surprises here. It's basically the same line of credit that we've had, only with a different banking partner this time, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions or comments?
I agree with the philosophy. The time to get a line of credit is when you don't need it. Because it's not so easy.
It's not so easy if you need it.
With a bank of that size, it's very difficult to do it quickly.
Yeah. And I'm sure if you read through the all the paperwork from the bank, it's a...
Oh.
It's, yeah.
Yeah. I did the promise.
Exactly. All right, I'd entertain a motion to approve the resolution for the line of credit with J.P. Morgan Chase.
So moved.
A second.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Regent Brody, if I might, I think that I want to remind folks of the conversation that we did have around line of credit, not just inside of this room, but across campus a few years ago, where people thought the sky was falling because we did this. And I'm thankful that the conversation today demonstrates an understanding of why you do it when you don't need it. And I'm hopeful that our community also has been more well educated and understands that as well.
Thank you.
Regent Brody, may we revote? Chair Milliken isn't on the committee.
I'm sorry, I didn't. You're not on,
you're not on the committee. So we'll need a motion from a committee member.
I'll make it part.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, motion by Regent Dennison, second by, was it?
Nichols.
Regent Nichols. All in favor now say aye.
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 Thank you. All right, item four is the personnel actions, approval of faculty and staff personnel actions, which have been approved through the administrative channels and executed through the Human Resources Information System during the period 3/1/24 through 9/30/24, and one-time compensation payments executed through the payroll system covering the period 9/1/23 to 9/30/24.
So, I'll just remind everyone that the report, we typically would bring both of these reports to the Finance Committee each quarter. We've made some changes over the past year. The personnel actions will come twice a year, and then the one-time payments just once a year. So I think it streamlines. We've also taken off the names of the individuals. This is something we worked closely with the previous staff regent and with Shane on these changes and other Finance Committee members, and I think it's streamlined the process. So
I would just add that while the names are not on there, we still do have the personnel numbers.
Yes.
And that doesn't change. So we're still transparent here. And also just the amount of paperwork and redundancy that we're seeing, I guess work redundancy that we're seeing here, so all the information is still here. It's just reducing the number of times we see it.
Much more efficient process.
So I'm happy to,
okay,
to take any
questions. Any other questions or comments? If not, I'd entertain a motion to approve the faculty and staff personnel actions.
So moved.
Motion by Regent Spiller.
Second.
Second by Regent Dennison. Beat out Regent West by half a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, we're ready to approve the revisions to the bylaws for the WKU Board of Regents, and I will call on our internal auditor, Bruce Wiseman, for some background here.
Thank you, Regent Brody. Good morning, everyone. As we'll see here, as this pops up here in just a second, this action item was the result of the external review that my office went through in the spring and over into the summer. And what we found in that review we were looking at, and the external reviewers were looking at, were comparing the bylaws of the Board of Regents to how we operate from an internal audit perspective. And what we found was auditing was the responsibility of the Executive Committee, according to the bylaws. Well, the way we've been operating is external audit with Jennifer Williams and Forvis, and my office internal audit has been working through the Finance and Budget Committee. So we had a mismatch there. So what we're trying to do with this action item is through discussions, we've looped in President Caboni, Regent Brody, General Counsel, we've looped in Forvis, and we said, what's the best way to handle this? Should we change how we operate with audit-related activities, or should we change the bylaws? And where we came to a conclusion is, we should change the bylaws and move the audit functions under the Finance and Budget Committee, where that expertise of financial activity rests. So that's what this action item gets to. I'm happy to answer any questions you all have about that.
Okay. You want to comment any more on the renaming as far as two committees or one committee?
So it is still the one committee, the Finance and Budget Committee. We're looking at changing the name to the Finance, Budget, and Audit Committee, so it throws audit in the name to let everyone know that that's the home of audit, internal and external.
Questions, comments?
Since this is a bylaw change, is it just Finance and Budget that's voting on it now, and then it's going to
be introduced and then voted at the next meeting?
Information to them. Not an action item.
That's right.
So, no vote today?
Well, the committee's vote is just a recommendation.
Right.
So, the committee can recommend that this be taken to the full board, but it will require 2/3 majority of the entire board to pass at the next meeting.
Gotcha. Well, I'd entertain a motion to approve to recommend this to the fiscal board.
So moved.
Motion by Regent Spiller. Second by Regent Dennison again. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Jen, you're going to have to go faster to make sure you beat Regent Dennison.
I know.
Now we have an information item, the quarterly internal audit report.
Very good. Thank you, Regent Brody. And I will ask for all of your patience today. My update's a tad bit longer than it normally is just because we haven't met for a while and we've got some extra things to talk about. So first, we'll lead off with the FY24 audit plan results. I think we had a successful year. We completed 8 projects at June 30th. We had 1 in progress and a few were remaining. So we finished about 80% of what we set out to do, and that's pretty good. There's a list of the projects and where we went. Moving on to FY25, where we are in the first 3 months of this year, we've got 1 project done. It's the special license plate review that we do every year. I'll remind you all, that's the money when you buy a WKD license plate through the state. They send part of that money to us to use for scholarship funds. So we make sure the money got to us, and then we applied it to scholarships. No findings were noted there. Everything's looking good.
Do you know roughly how much money that is?
Just I believe last year we received about $55,000.
Yes.
Now, some of that is timing. Now, I know it did not include the fourth quarter payment, so we're talking between $55,000 and $80,000. We've got 2 projects in process. The President's Travel and Entertainment, we're very close to wrapping that one up, and then Global Learning and Study Abroad, also in progress.
So before you go on, because you and I had this discussion, there's been some national news about some President's travel and entertainment expenses at other institutions. Could you give us a comparison? I know you're aware of that news. Could you give us some comparisons?
We'll issue the full report soon, but I will tell you, I'm pleased, just like I was last year, that President Caboni has a very conservative mindset when it comes to fiscal spending. We did not see any inappropriate charges in our review. And truly the only recommendation that we have at this time is some process improvements regarding can we use state money or foundation money for expenses. So that's where we're at. And compared to some other presidents that are spending out there, I believe the headline was $38,000 for a sushi dinner. I didn't see any of those.
My entire travel and entertainment
bus. Like Jimmy. So that's where we are. I'll keep you all apprised of where we are with the audit plan throughout the year, as we do every year. This is a new slide. It compares our time of where we're actually spending it on the left compared to what we thought we were going to spend it on the right, our plan time. The biggest changes, is the dark gray slice, initiatives in education. In September, Caitlin and I, we attended a professional conference, so we had a lot of our professional education done in September. It's front-loaded. That slice of the pie should get smaller as the year goes on. The lighter gray, the advisory time, is also a bit higher so far because we've been spending time talking with individuals about processes. We've been answering questions. We've been doing things that weren't on this list of projects, but really still adding value to the university. So we've been spending more time there. I think that's a good use of our time. So then the big red piece of the pie, the project time, is smaller than what we planned because those other pieces of the pie are larger. Again, we'll keep you guys up to date. I'm happier with where these pie charts were than last year. There's less categories. It's easier to get your head wrapped around, I think. All right. Regarding follow-up, normally when we talk about this, you'll see the bar charts. I added the big red number 1 because that is the number of outstanding audit items that management is working on. We've made a recommendation, and they're working to implement it. We're down to 1. So that's great. You can see the crosshatch bars. There's a 2 and 2. There's 4 total. So far since we met last, 4 management action plans have been put in place. We validated that they're working. Those improvements have been made. So we're down to 1. I'll offer a big congratulations to the Mehurin Honors College. They've done a lot of great work of implementing all of their audit recommendations. So a big shout out to Rodney King, Spencer Anderson, Amy Rowland. Those are the folks we worked most closely with. And I know the whole team was involved. So we want to celebrate that when we see that and when that happens. So we're in a good spot from a follow-up standpoint. Regarding the hotline, a quick recap from last year. We had 10 hotline calls. Compare that to the prior year, there were 3. So we've seen that level of hotline activity triple. I think that's a factor of us talking about it in these meetings, talking about it in presentations around campus. We've sent emails. People know it's there. So we're going to continue our education that the resource is there and also talk about what are appropriate things to be reporting through the hotline to make sure that we're focusing in on where it needs to go. Again, you suspect fraud, you think ethics, you think of conflicts of interest. Those are the big hot topics that should come in. And I'll remind you, if you're questioning whether I should report it or not, report it, we'll figure it out. We'll get it to where it needs to go. So we had 10 cases last year. So far this year, we've had 3 that we're working on. We've closed 1. There are 2 remaining. So nothing big going on, nothing a huge concern that I need to share with you all. But stay tuned. And then there's the always the reminder. You can call me directly, email me, or you can do the hotline. It's completely anonymous. It's run by a third party. All right, so our external review, that was completed for internal audit. Number one, this is a required review of the professional standards that needs to happen every 5 years. Just a quick recap, we got the highest rating, generally conforms, and beneath that, I wanted to kind of visually show everyone what does that mean. And so we got rated on 50 different standards that are out there. And those are listed across the bottom. The numbers don't matter. They shouldn't mean anything to you. And then you'll see the 4, what I'll call bite marks, where there are 4 things where we partially conformed with a standard, not generally conformed. And those 4 were these. I'm going to touch on them very briefly. The first one, proficiency. We partially conform that our audit team has the skills and knowledge to address the wide range of risk at this university. So what does that mean? Caitlin and I are not experts in IT auditing. We just don't have those skills. We haven't got there yet. So 1, we're learning them. 2, we're considering outsourcing if we need to do work with those. But that is a partially conforms. It's a very typical thing to see for small audit teams of 2 or 3 people. Coordination and reliance. That is where we need to work better with other areas around the university that are providing assurance. Think the Title IX office. Think EH&S. Think of NCAA compliance. Think of other compliance type areas. We just need to coordinate with them to, 1, understand what they're doing, what they're seeing, and so that we're not duplicating work. We've done this very well with the procurement card office. We know what they're doing. And we use that and when we're selecting our audits and doing our audit procedures. We need to just expand that that practice with other areas around campus. This third one is a real easy one, the engagement work program. The work program is your list of your audit steps of what you're going to do in every audit. The standards require that me, the chief auditor, approve that before you do your work. I've been doing that, but I haven't written it down anywhere. So I've started writing it down. And now we're going to cross this one off the list. The final one here, communicating and accepting risks. I think I've talked a little bit about this before from a risk management perspective. In any organization, your senior leadership, President Caboni, Provost Fisher, EVP Howarth, they are going to be looking at risks and they're going to be saying, these are risks that we can accept. And if you don't accept risks, you're going to grind your operations to a halt because you're going to become so inefficient. My role in all of that, according to the professional standards, is to say, if they accept any risk that is too great, I need to communicate that to you all. So what we found in this deficiency with our office is we need to write down what those procedures are. When I see a risk like that, who do I communicate it to? What's the process? What does that look like? So again, this is something we're going to be working on this year, of what does that process look like? Any questions on those? Those were our biggest deficiencies.
The way the process works, you would typically inform management that, hey, I appreciate that you don't think this is a significant risk. I'm of a different opinion, and management gets the opportunity to reevaluate. And if we still say it's not, then it becomes a conversation between you.
That is typically how it works.
And then me and the board.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. In that review, the external team called out a couple of areas where we're kind of excelling. I wanted to mostly put this up here because of the quote at the bottom. One of the people who did a survey as part of this review, they said, I'll read it out in case anybody can't read it. Our internal audit activity does a tremendous job of advising, being a resource, and assisting with questions and issues. They're available, accessible, and eager to be a team player in making WKU a better place. I don't know who wrote that, if it was somebody back here. I don't know who did it, but thank you. That, I wanted to share that because that is what we're striving to do with our office. And someone else said it, and they said it very well. So I would share that with you all. And then just as a quick recap, the other part of the standards are we need to share and communicate with you all on these items, these opportunities for improvement that have been identified. So every meeting until we get these all done, we're going to share them with you. This is a quick highlight. To save time today, I'll get into some of these details next time. But we've got three of them done already. We're working on three right now, and four are remaining. If that wasn't enough fun that we had an external review, the professional standards are also changing. They're going to changes go into effect in January. And not that you all need to know about internal audit standards, but I do need you to know a little piece of them. Right now, they are it's mainly a reorganization. It is not a complete overhaul, thank goodness. But the part that I want you all to hone in on is domain number three, the little blue area here, governing the internal audit function. And within there, there are three components. I'm going to make them bigger here so everybody can see them. Principle 6, 7, and 8. Over the next couple of meetings, we're going to talk about each one of these and talk about what the responsibilities of the board are related to internal audit, just so that we're all on the same page of what's expected of you and what's expected of me according to the standards and what those what the changes say about those relationships. So stay tuned for that. Exciting things coming. Hang with me. Other updates in the office, that we're back kind of to things we normally talk about in these meetings. Annual confirmations. The standards require that I confirm to you all at least annually, one, that our office is independent, that we are reporting to the board and not to the president. Check the box, we're doing that. Number two, I need to confirm that we conform with the professional standards. That's what we just did with the external review that was out there. So we've done our confirmations, we can check those boxes. When I speak with you all, I always talk about consultations. And those are, again, things where folks are calling us and saying, Bruce, I don't know how to interpret a policy. I don't know how something should work. What's your view on this? What's your take? Or something is taking too long in my department. How do we make that process better? Those are consultations. Last year, we had a goal of doing 25. We had 48 of those. And in my eyes, it's less about what the calls are about or what we're improving, but it's the number of consultations indicating people are willing to reach out. They know we're here, and they trust us, and they value our opinion. So 48 calls last year. We've got 13 this year so far. We're going to try to cross 50 for this year. So if you don't have any questions or want to call, please do so. President Cimone mentioned earlier, enterprise risk management. In the spring, my office, we have a risk assessment every year. We survey folks. We interview them. We're looking for what are the biggest risks to the university. After that, we analyze them. We find out what those biggest risks are. The next step in risk management is, what actions are you going to take? And so in the September and October cabinet meetings, the president has invited me to come and talk about some of those bigger risks and how can we respond to them. So big kudos to you, President Caboni, for helping drive that and supporting that that initiative. And it's a great activity. It's a great action that is happening when you're having those discussions because it leads to better results.
So one of my roles is leadership, but the other role is actually management. And, you know, there's good overlap sometimes. But as a management function, thinking about how you mitigate risk as an institution gives you an opportunity to facilitate strategic conversations. And so I've been really pleased with, number one, that the university perceives risk management as a strategic function, which many places it is not. And I will say, if you had been part of those two conversations around risk mitigation, what we might do as a leadership team, and who's responsible for what, I think you'd be pleased for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's evident that these risks are top of mind for across silos, number one. Number two, we've already been addressing those risks and working to mitigate them. So you can think about the enrollment picture and net tuition revenue. You think about state appropriations and the budget as two of the major buckets that we face in terms of potential challenges and that would create risk. They've been just fantastic conversations. Kudos to the leadership team for being proactive in addressing them, but then also for having the conversation around the table, which a lot of times this is a check-the-box activity, and I'm proud of the fact that we have used risk management as a strategic function. And that would be opaque to you all without a little bit of a description. So
I'm very pleased with where we're at and where we're going. So last box on here, professional development and contributions. We went to a conference. We learned a lot of things about what's going on in higher ed everywhere else, what other areas are auditing. So we have great ideas of what to go on in here. We made a presentation about attracting and retaining talent. That's a big risk anywhere, in any organization. But it aligns very closely with VSIP of how do you retain people and how do you manage those people. So we had that presentation that we did there. Looking ahead, what's coming down the pike? We're going to continue increasing our campus awareness. If you want, check out a webinar on Monday at 3 o'clock. I'm teaming up with Dr. Marco Dumancic about AI beyond the classroom. So it's hopefully going to be some practical things that staff or faculty can start doing in using AI, getting their feet wet, and getting used to that, and hopefully streamlining some processes, becoming more efficient. Second, we got invited to speak at an accounting class. Kudos to Shane Spiller for helping coordinate that. We were asked last year to go and talk, and apparently we were all right. They asked us to come back. I think the students enjoyed it. It gives them a little exposure to internal audit and what we do and why we do those things. And then finally, we got invited to talk at the Kentucky Association of Collegiate Registrars and Admissions Officers. They're going to have a conference on campus, and they saw a presentation we did about artificial intelligence last spring and said, hey, can you come share that with our group? And we said, hey, we'll be happy to do that. So that's it. Thank you all for hanging with me. Are there any questions I can answer?
I was just going to a couple of comments. Yep. First off, since we were talking about staffing and everything else, and since you report to the whatever the committee is going to be named once we vote on it, I'm sure you feel comfortable. I want to make sure you feel like you need more resources for other things to speak with that committee. You seem doing a lot of work. This committee would be happy to advocate for you, but also I'm sure your office is open. I know you posted me this week coming in and talking. Anybody on the board, it's not just the finance and audit committee.
Absolutely.
Anyone wants to reach out and have a meeting, I'm sure your team would be happy to meet with them.
We would love to.
Just one comment, too. Bruce and I have talked about most of the items he presented today, and we talked about the audit work plan. And I know that the audit function itself is down a little bit percentage-wise, but the interaction with the staff here at WKU is up, and thus the compliment. So I think
we're in the early stages of you as the internal auditor. I think as the years progress, we'll see more audit and less of that. So,
thank you.
Any other questions?
All right. Thank you. Mr. Chair, that concludes Finance and Budget Committee.
Very good. Well, we've been here an hour and a half, so let's take a 10-minute break.